But so you were at a party, and
yeah,
a girl didn't show up.
At a party, and this girl, she was fairly popular, she didn't show up. And she was working as a waitress in one of the cafes. And so she said, well, she's probably still at work. And we waited, and it was, you know, late. So he still didn't show up. So we figured, what the heck, you know, maybe. And we all had a few drinks, so we're all feeling pretty happy. So
yeah.
I said, I'll go look for her. So I, and she wasn't too far away. So I went to her home. And well, in those days, people lived in these, you know, walled-in things. So big iron gates, and I was locked. So that didn't faze me too much. So I just climbed over the wall and got in there and went to her place and banged on the door. And her sister opened the door, and she said, no, she wasn't here. She went to another party. And I says, okay, well, the heck with that. Tried to talk the sister into coming, and she said, the heck with you guys, and I'm just going to go to bed. I said, you're all drunk anyway, so right. So I climbed back over the wall to get out in the street. It was just my luck. There was a patrol coming around the street. And so, you know, I got arrested. So as I'm walking down there, and they had me walk, and they didn't handcuff me or anything, but they were walking a soldier on each side with his, you know, the bayonet. I said, okay. And then around the corner come a couple other guys from the same party, you know, yelling at me. And so I start singing to warn them. So I sing, you know, the time, these things are not too good. Get out of here. Get out of here quickly, because you'll be in trouble too. So I ended up in this police station, and they kind of chided me why I was out there and stuff. And finally, I had to sign a document that I will never, ever climb a wall again while I'm in China.
I
had to sign that, and then they let me go.
I see. On your future visits to China, stay off wall.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. So, but in general, while you were under the communist regime, you weren't subjected to any particular pressure or confiscation of property or...
No, we had no property. We were not, you know...
Yeah, you weren't in that group. Yeah.
No.
And as far as being allowed to leave... There wasn't any great difficulty.
No, there was no difficulty in leaving. The difficulty in leaving was trying to get a visa to go somewhere.
Right.
We could go to Russia, but after all the stories we got, the enthusiasm disappeared.
Yeah.
One other incident happened. I don't know if it was kind of a couple of the guys upstairs. At least one was with me on this thing. We used to, at that time, we were going to St. Francis Xavier's, and we were pretty, you know, and a lot of truancy. So we skipped school one day, four of us, and we hired one of these sampans, a little sampan, to take us up the river. So we were going up the river, and then we got into a discussion with him because he wanted an equivalent amount of money to bring us back.
Ah, yeah.
And he said, we argued with him. He said, no, we paid for both ways. And the end result was, since he had the boat, he just kicked us out. So we ended up somewhere out there in the boonies and decided, well, you know, okay, you know, at that age, what the heck, you don't worry about too many things. We're going to walk back. And we started walking, and we looked around, and it looked strange here because we saw anti-aircraft guns. And then we saw planes. This is, my God, where are we? We were in Lung Hua Airfield.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Which was a military airfield.
This was during the Japanese occupation?
No, this was during the communists.
Oh, I know, okay.
Yeah,
right,
this
on.
Was in 1950.
50, okay.
So I said, well, we're in trouble here because how are you going to get out of this place? And fortunately, we looked around there and it had some guys there playing basketball, and they were all Caucasians. So the Russian pilots that were there to train the Chinese pilots.
Interesting, yeah.
So here we are, two of us were Caucasians, myself and this one of my buddies, and two of us were half.
Eurasian,
a mixture of Portuguese and Chinese. Mm. So I said, okay, just, you know, play it cool. So we all walked up, and there was the gate, and there was a guard of the gate. So I said, okay, well, the only way to get out is through that gate. So I said, we can try to bluff it. So we just said, I said, just don't talk, just walk. So just walking. And this guard was just a kid, you know. But he turned around, he saw us coming, he started raising his rifle with his bayonet there. And the first one I hit in this row was my buddy Jack Cole. He automatically pushed that rifle away. Mm. And the guard was so stunned, we just marched right through. Yeah. And then there was a corner there, so he says, okay, walk slow. So we came to the corner and then ran like hell.
But you didn't have any contact with those Russian pilots.
No, right? No.
I thought maybe you used your Russian to...
No, that would have made it worse.
Yeah,
well, really would be in trouble.
I see, yeah. Well, okay, so let's shift to Brazil. So you got to Brazil, I forget what year now.
Well, I got to Brazil in 53, I guess it was. I'm forgetting. 55.
Oh, because you'd been in Hong Kong before.
I've been in Hong Kong for a year, about 55, And my grandfather... That's how we got the visa to Brazil. My grandfather and my aunt and my uncle got a visa there first, and they ended up there. So anyway, we come there, so we stayed with them a little while. And my grandfather, being an old nobleman, you know, he figured that I got to get some big important job. I says, well, grandfather, you know, I was just about 18. I said, well, what can I offer? He says, well, you're a gentleman and you speak, you know, speak English. I says, well, so what? So anyway, so he went there and tried to find some places, some office job. And I just said, I was getting a little down because, you know, where am I going to get a job? I don't speak a word of Portuguese. Got no trade, really. And I ran across this guy from Shanghai, actually not even a close friend, just we happened to know each other from the YMCA.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting having a cup of coffee in one of these little bistros, a buchiquin they call it, and he was there. So he said, oh, hi. And so he said, how you doing? I said, well, you know, I was kind of trying to find a job, not easy. He said, oh, you want a job? He says, you mind working in a factory? I said, no, I don't mind working anywhere. So he said, okay, he said, I get you a job, guaranteed. You come down, and he gave me directions, and it was way in the boonies, way out of, this was in Rio. So I got on this bus and traveled for, I don't know, about 45 minutes and finally found the place. And I show up there in a white suit and a tie and a whole bit, and go there, and this guy that... introduced me to, he was an American, the manager, and he kind of looked at me, and we started talking, we kind of hit it off. He says, okay, you got the job, when can you start? I says, anytime. You want to start now? Yeah. He says, okay. He says, wrote something, he says, take this down to the personnel office. So I went down there, and the guy started talking to me in Portuguese, and I says, I don't know, just shoved this paper at him. The guy was kind of rude, but end result, he, you know, just signed the thing so I could start working.
Yeah.
And it was funny because this first job, he says, this guy looked at me, he's American, he says, I said, well, what do I do? He says, well, you see up there, on top of the stairs there, kind of a raised platform, the whole bunch of boxes, the cardboard boxes. I says, well, what about them? He says, that's all TV tubes. And we're trying to sort them. You know, we got 21-inch, and we got 19-inch, 15-inch, stuff like that. I need them all sorted. I said, okay. So I'm sitting there, and he's sitting there. And we look at each other, and he says, what? I says, well, where's my help? He says, you're it. I says, okay, fine. So I took my jacket off. I said, can I leave it here? Yeah. So I went up there, and I was pretty strong in those days. I was hustling those boxes at two at a time all over the place, and did the whole thing. Impressed the heck out of him. He was checking me out to see, you know, here's a guy shows up in a white suit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a, you know, pretty hard time there for about a week, and then I got promoted and became a store manager and stuff like that. So worked out real good. But when I showed up back home from this first job on my white suit, all gray, grandfather said I had a heart attack. So what are you doing? So I told him, I said, no, this is great. And then I learned Portuguese right there, because I made it a point of carrying a notebook and a pencil and had a commitment of 10 words a day. So I'd write down, I'll ask the guy, I think Brazilians are great, you know, they're wonderful people. I'll say, I'll pick up a hammer, I says, you know, what's this? And the guy will say, martelo. So I say, okay, write it down, martelo. And you know, little by little, so in a month I could communicate easy.
Really?
Except there was one problem. I learned all factory talk.
Uh-huh.
And the first time I was invited to a kind of a decent home to some gal that I, you know, made friends with. Actually, her brother introduced me to her. And so I came to this home, and there all these ladies sitting there drinking their coffee all the way. And I said, somebody asked me a question in Portuguese, and I answered, and I thought that something I said was pretty simple, and the brother nearly dropped his coffee, grabbed me, and pulled me out to the balcony. He says, don't say that. I said, what I do? Some words they use, he says, no, that's not used. So it was funny, but I learned.
Your mother now, after she landed in Brazil, I didn't ask you when she was born or how old she was, but by the time
very short, very close. She was only about 17 when I was born. In those days, they married real young.
So she was still relatively young. And did she work, or what did she do?
In Brazil? Harry came down and joined us in Brazil, and she worked for a while because of her English. She worked in the American consulate as some clerical work, as a typist, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked until Harry came. When Harry came, he still had some connections, and he joined, he became manager of RKO.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they opened up an office, and then later on, he managed a movie house, and they had a movie house that was specializing in what they call art films.
Yeah,
that would be like, you know, the classic films, Fellini and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So, let's concentrate on your story then. So, you stayed in Brazil and worked, and you said you eventually got to the States. So, what happened there?
Well, I worked in Brazil. I worked in this company, happened to be Standard Electric. And then I got fed up of Rio for different reasons and decided to move to, my mother moved to Sao Paulo. My mother and Harry moved to Sao Paulo. They left me in Rio. In fact, they left me an apartment in Rio that they were renting.
Yeah.
So I took over the... So that's a whole story in itself. But anyway, for various reasons, I decided to move from Rio to Sao Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
So I came down to Sao Paulo and been looking for a job. So I figured, well, if I'm going to look for a job, look for the biggest there is. So I checked in with General Motors, who had a factory in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there and did my interview and came home and just shortly got a phone call, so I got the job. So I went there, I worked for Rio, I worked for GM for about 6 months, and then the boss called me in. He says, how would you like to go to the States?
Mm-hmm.
I says, well, you know, so they sent me a scholarship to GMI in Flint.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So that's how I ended there. And after my taste here in the States, I decided I'm going to move back here. So I'm in.
And so what training were you given?
I went to engineering and graduated as an industrial engineer.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, when I came back, I went in San Francisco, went to Hills College and got mechanical engineering.
I see, yeah.
So. And then the nice thing is that GM transferred me directly, so I didn't lose any tenure at all.
Mm.
So I joined GM in 60, back in Brazil. And then when I came here, I came to the States in 63. But they just continued my, what you call, date from then.
You didn't return to Brazil after graduating?
Oh, I did a couple of times on business,
yeah. And so your new home was in what city in the States, basically?
In San Francisco, basically.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I worked in Fremont.
I see. Oh, that's right, yeah. And when did you and your wife meet? And
well,
how did you meet? And
this was years later, actually. This is for both of us a second marriage. And
you haven't told me about the first one yet. You'll have to mention that at least.
Well, no, the first one was in 63.
Here in the States?
In San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that lasted until 69, I guess, 6 years or so. And it was different. So we have two boys from that.
From the first marriage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was divorced for a while, until about when did we meet? In about 85, I guess. 84, yeah. And then, see, Beverly was a nurse to my mother. My mother passed away from cancer. And Beverly works in oncology, so
right.
She was my mother's nurse.
Your mother came to the States? Or
yeah, I finally got her to come when Harry passed away in Brazil. So I never got a chance of getting him here. But after I got here, then I tried to get her here. She first thought she wasn't going to come. Then she finally arrived, 72, I think, 73 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she lived with me for a while. And then she got sick. She got, what cancer was it?
Colon cancer.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, she never admitted. She just said she was sick. But I was single for quite a while.
Okay.
And didn't intend to get married. Then my mother one day comes back from the hospital and tells me, "Oh, I met this wonderful person. Called her Beth instead of Bev, that you got to meet." I says, "Mother, forget it. You know, I don't want to." "No, you got to meet her." So I refused. I didn't until just a couple of days before she passed away. Then I met Bev, and we found out we have a birthday in the same day. We're born the same day.
Yeah.
And then one thing led to another, and we've been married now for 20 years.
Uh-huh. Congratulations.
And we got a child from this marriage, so. So we have two kids. She also had two kids prior to the marriage. So we got kids ranging from 41 to our latest, who is just going to be 18 next year.
Now, after you split up from your first wife, did your children live with you or with her?
Partially. Partially with me and partially with her.
Yeah. What were the names of those two?
The boys?
Yeah, the boys.
The oldest son is Igor. And younger son is Andre.
And your child with Beverly is called?
Is Kira.
A girl?
Yes.
Yeah, I see.
She's a senior right now.
She's a senior where?
She's a senior right now in high school.
Oh, in high school.
Mm-hmm.
In San Francisco?
No, we live in Rochester Hills, Michigan.
Oh, all right, well, we haven't gotten to that yet. Okay. So when I left you last, you were working for GM in the Fremont, and what happened?
Okay, I worked in Fremont until they shut Fremont down. Fremont was shut down, I think, when was that, 80, about 79, 80, thereabouts. And, let's see, a lot of things happened in between. You lost me there. Where was I?
Well,
because no, I was in Fremont twice. When I first came to the States, I went to Fremont and worked there. And then I got an offer to work overseas. Actually, I wanted to work overseas. I was still married to my first wife.
Mm-hmm.
So I got an assignment in Europe, working for GM in Antwerp.
Excuse me, could we get your first wife's name on the tape?
Irene.
Irene, okay. And what was her maiden name?
Sapelkin.
So Russian extraction.
S-A-P-E-L-K-I-N.
I see. Yeah, and Beverly's maiden name is?
Beverly's maiden name is Qualls. Q-A-L-L-S.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. Yeah. No, it gets kind of confusing. I'm confusing myself.
So you went to Europe.
Well, on assignment, I was assigned to work with four plants in Europe. I was stationed in Antwerp, but I worked with a plant in Copenhagen in Denmark, in Bien or Biel in Switzerland, of course Antwerp, and Azambuja in Portugal.
Oh, wow. I'm really
so the Portuguese helped me a lot in Azambuja.
Yeah.
So I kept traveling around all the time, and this lasted until about, 75 or thereabouts. And then I got an offer to go to Iran. They were opening up a new plant in Tehran, Iran.
Really, yeah.
So I went to Iran with my first wife kicking and screaming. She hated that part. She loved Europe. But then we ended up in Iran, and we were there for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the marriage kind of soured. That happens quite often, these assignments, because you're working the whole time, so I was busy the whole time, and she hated every minute of it. Anyway, so we were in Iran for just before the end of just prior to the start of the Khomeini thing.
Oh yeah.
So then I came back and got stationed in Detroit for a while. But I didn't particularly care to sit in an office. And then I got an offer to come back to Fremont, which is unusual. They don't usually take you back that quick, but it was very good. So I ended up back in Fremont. And then I got restless again. Then we got divorced about that time. And then I got restless again, and about that's when I met Beverly. And then I got an offer. Sorry, I'm confusing it. I didn't meet Beverly in Fremont. On Fremont, they closed Fremont because it was, that was when GM was cutting back. And I got offered to move to Hamtramck in Detroit. That's when I met Beverly in Detroit, area. And shortly after I met her, an opportunity arose, I got restless to go overseas again, and she liked to travel, and an opportunity arose to go to Russia, which I took, and we ended up in Russia, what was that, in 91. Yeah.
Oh, I see. So
from 91 till 99, we were stationed in Russia. So we went
working
to
for who? You're still
General Motors.
You're still connected with General Motors.
It was a very interesting period, because when we arrived, you recall in 91, that's when the whole thing changed.
Fell apart, yeah.
Right. In fact, we arrived there on August 1, official assignment started August 1, and in August 21 was when they had this big thing there with Khrushchev, and, not Khrushchev,
Gorbachev. Yeah. Did you witness any of this?
Well, yeah, of course. I was right there.
You were in Moscow?
Kidding my friends. I said, look, I didn't do anything. It wasn't me. Not my fault.
Yeah.
We were down to Moscow. We were, in fact, I had a little discussion with my GM management. I'm not very good with directions. I don't like people telling me what to do. It's been my whole life. But I get this call, this frantic call from, because we had a satellite phone, which was also rare in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Telling me that, we need you out of there in 24 hours, because it's unsafe. And I call my boss. This call came from at the top GM security, So I didn't argue. I says, I'll get back with you. And I called my boss, who was more understanding. I said, look, he says, you guys sent me here because of my knowledge of the country, of the language, and the culture, and all the thing. Absolutely, there's nothing happening here in Tolyatti. All the trouble is in Moscow, and I can't go back unless I go through Moscow,
mm-hmm.
or I go through, you know, Latvia, which is even worse.
So you were sent to Tulyatti to, what was GM doing there?
Okay.
I mean, that's
yeah.
the old Lada factory, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, I had to, well, GM is very big. I had to transfer from the automotive division, which is the main GM thing, to, at that time, it was called AC Rochester, which is afterwards became Delphi.
Yeah.
Who was a part manufacturer.
Yeah.
Because GM signed a contract with Vaz to provide a fuel injection system.
Uh-huh.
They call it engine management system.
I see.
And I was sent out there to be on the manufacturing side to work with them to
go ahead.
Liaison this whole project.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out there for Delphi, which was part of GM at that time.
So you're sort of as a consultant, or?
No, I wasn't a consultant. I was.
Was GM actually investing in the manufacturer?
No, GM has never invested until just recently. That's the thing. That's a whole different subject. I'm very unhappy with them about that because it's kind of dumb the way they do things, and that's why they're in trouble right now.
Uh-huh.
Because GM always looks at the quarterly report, doesn't look long term.
Yeah.
And that hurt them.
Yeah.
But they just don't understand that. So on this thing, the whole idea was, you know, make a fast buck. So don't invest any money, sell your know-how.
Yeah.
Well, know-how, you know, people catch on real quick and they say, the heck with you, you know, we don't need
you
anymore.
Right.
So, but I was there because the Russians, or the Soviets in those days, refused to sign a contract unless they get the ability, they could buy the rights to build these parts importing all the time.
Yeah.
And because of my knowledge of plants and manufacturing systems, I was going to be for their future to see, to analyze their capabilities of being able to do those things.
Because
of the plants and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I never really got to that. And so I was doing more liaison, that is, making sure that visiting Americans, it wasn't just Americans, it was, you know, people from Luxembourg and people from Germany. Would you know, guide them around, make sure they do the, you know, that there's no big fights and things going on. They'll move from meeting to meeting and kind of.
So GM allowed you to stay there.
You talked about. They didn't allow me to stay there. They paid me to stay there.
Well, yeah. At first, they wanted to evacuate you, but.
No. What happened there is they wanted to evacuate me. So I told the boss, I said, "Look, this thing is going to be over, and it's silly."
Mm-hmm.
So his advice to me was just, you know, stall him. I did, and in 3 days the thing was all over.
Mm-hmm.
But what really played in my favor was the Russians, they know everything. So the word got out, says, you see what kind of a guy he is? His management told him to get out, but he had enough faith in us to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So my prestige went, you know, way up there. So
it
really helped me out and opened up a lot of doors.
Yeah. And so throughout the years in Russia, you were doing this work, the same kind of work.
Actually, the one that was doing most of the work in Russia was Beverly, because Beverly was a sort of a kind of an unofficial ambassador out there. She did more for Russian-American relationships than the embassy did, because she worked there with a university as an American language instructor, because the Russians found out that the English that they knew was British English.
Right.
So they wanted to know American English, and so she was there. And
did Beverly learn Russian?
Yes, she did.
Okay.
Actually, she speaks a much better Russian when I'm not around, because she gets intimidated, and I tend to butt in too much. But she picked it up there. She learned it there. She took lessons, and also just by association.
And you both were pretty happy with that.
We loved it there. Yeah. We loved it there. It's once you get past this initial barrier. A lot of people got a wrong impression. They come to Russia for a short visit. they see these sullen faces, you know, because the Russians are thought that you don't smile just you're an idiot if you're smiling for no reason. So when a Russian smiles, there's really a reason to smile.
Yeah.
And once you get past that initial wall, they're very warm people. And we had a really good time. Our daughter basically grew up there because she was only 2 years old when she arrived.
Mm.
And
so she grew up speaking Russian too?
Oh yeah, she's fluent.
Good.
She speaks actually four languages.
Wow.
She speaks Russian and English. She can speak English with a Russian accent and Russian with an English accent.
I see. So, well, that's unusual.
No, she doesn't.
Where did you live mostly throughout your Russian stay?
It wasn't
the most of the time.
All the time.
All the time. Did you? But you got out and visited Moscow.
Traveled
around.
A nice thing. We had 4 hours. Every year.
The
GM wanted us so badly to be there, they would send us out on a fully paid vacation for a week anywhere we wanted to go.
Very nice.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. When did this end then, this Russian?
99.
And what brought what brought it to an end? I mean,
well,
your choice?
The contract expired. It's a GM.